Why? What does he do? Why does he have such a big mouth of this in March? And said, you know what? This is something we need to talk about, you know, across the country. What are people doing? And 10 months in, we're still wondering, how are people managing? What are people doing? It is a big process, these food pantries, and they are saving our country, and you guys are doing yeoman's work, and I hope you're all feeling really good about that. But with that being said, I'm going to hand this over to Don, right? Do you want to lead this, or Joe?
Sure. I can, well, how about if I start, and then I can turn it over to Joe or any others that want to talk about it. And everybody get the agenda Lisa shared. And I think he sent it in the most recent reminder of what we're going to try to cover today.
Yes.
And thanks, Lisa, for organizing. I just want to say that I'm running this. I'm the CEO at Kansas City, but you ask a question and you get volunteered for helping lead something. But that's a good thing, because it's really nice to have this group. So I guess the first topic we wanted to talk about, and Joe Hickey, who runs our food pantry, is just COVID fatigue and burnout and how you're all dealing with it. I know it's something I worry about, because Joe and her team are working so hard. We have more than doubled the size in Kansas City of the number of people we were serving just in March. And we have two pantries, two different locations on two sides of the state line. And they are our frontline workers, as I'm sure many of you that, you know, our therapists can work from home for the most part. So can our care managers, but our other systems, and our other programs, but it's not true for pantry, right? That's a physical thing. So just wanted to raise the issue for people who want to talk about it for fatigue and burnout, and what you're doing about it, and to help deal with it and share ideas.
Well, I'll start by saying that JFS is working here in Kansas City, working really hard to make sure that they're supportive of our staff and encouraging people to take the time off that we have worked so hard to earn, and our executive leaders are helping step in where they can to help relieve some of that pressure, to make sure that we are taking time off when we can, whether it's a day at a time or half a day, or if string in a few days together, to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. And even part of our process has been purchasing equipment to make our jobs easier that we may not have had on site when this first started, and making sure we have the right tools to do the work that we're currently doing. And then there's also, I've participated in a burnout seminar with the University of Missouri through Harvesters Food Bank about burnout for food pantries. And one of the things that I noticed was that a lot of the food pantries were not using volunteers and relying solely on increased staff. And how can we encourage people to use volunteers where it's safe? But we've also noticed that a lot of pantries just shut down and haven't been able to reopen. And we're really happy to have you guys here and on board to continue serving the community. Does anybody have anything that's working for them?
Well, Joe, I was going to ask, what were some of the tips and tools and tricks that you learned at this conference you went to, or this webinar, about burnout?
It was mostly noticing the signs of burnout and recognizing, you know, as we reduce some of our momentum to come to work each day, figuring out the small things that we can do to encourage taking time off, taking a walk around the building, finding 10 or 15 minutes to yourself throughout the day, or for your staff to find that time to just recharge and re-engage, to stay motivated in the important work that we are all doing around the country. That was the biggest thing that I got from it. There was a lot of people, you know, saying that they don't have the volunteers to do what they were doing, but encouraging people to take the small breaks and recognize the small victories to keep our momentum moving forward.
I'd like to say that we were able to get volunteers from Repair the World. Repair the World has a new division called Serve the Moment. So although we could not have our regular adult volunteers, everybody is being very cautious. And I would recommend if you have Repair the World in your city, they were fantastic. They are interviewed by Federation. They get a stipend. They have to work a certain amount of hours. And they are college, most of them are either seniors in college or just graduated college. And they put in 6 or 8 weeks and they are, you know, kind of not, we're obligated, but, you know, they're like hired as volunteers for that period. And so you had people who were young enough to be a little less afraid to be in the food bank and also able to help with computer work. They had those skills. So that was a really great thing for us. They just left in December last week, and we have a little bit of a gap, and now we get a new cohort in January. So Repair the World.
They're not in every community, but where they are, they could really be helpful. Absolutely.
Yes.
And they have a website, Serve the Moment, I think it's what it's called, Serve the Moment.
Yes, so these were Serve the Moment fellows. And they actually did get paid, which made them more reliable. Right. I mean, it's a small stipend, but they knew they were like paid volunteers, and that was a big help. They were terrific.
So what are other people doing to prevent burnout in with your staff or, you know, in your food pantries? Because I'm sure everyone feels that and is dealing with it. Or not.
Well, I'll sort of add that I, you know, I have a few employees working and we have been in the office. This is actually my first day working from home and it's just for the afternoon since probably the first time ever working from home because we're expecting a big snowstorm here. And what I have been trying to do is basically say, you know, after a long day, after a long, hard day, whether we're with clients or packing food, it's just to really say, you know what, it's 4 o'clock, go home an hour early and just like take that extra hour for yourself, which I think is important for somewhat morale, somewhat, you know, we don't get many perks on the job working for a food pantry, but I think that helps a little, just somebody getting out that extra hour early or taking a longer lunch one day. There's not much else we can really give them.
Anyone else have any good ideas as to what they've been doing?
Hi, Sam. Olivia from West Palm Beach, Alfred Jewish Family Service. We have a very small food pantry, and Belinda is going to be taking it over soon and probably expanding it. But in the meantime, we've been having people come to the agency or we've been delivering food. We have one staff member who's in the office who's actually doing that. The rest of us are all working at home. So when she gets a little bit stressed with everything, she basically calls and she just needs to vent a lot. Not a lot, but when she needs to vent, she needs to vent. And I found that that has helped people. They really appreciate just somebody listening. Sometimes helping to figure out what some issues are and making some suggestions, but primarily it's just listening. So I would say that's one of the things that we're doing.
For people, I'm kind of interested, you know, we have continued volunteers and work. We're doing a number of procedures to keep them safe, but how many people are continuing to have volunteers, or do you have a significantly fewer, like we have fewer volunteers than we used to, mostly from our choice, not some even so much theirs? Chrissy?
Cincinnati's
going. You're saying you do have volunteers, or are there?
Yes, yes, we do definitely have volunteers. I mean, our need, we've kind of tightened things up a little bit, you know, offered a little bit more curbside, kind of really started looking at like, do you need delivery or can you come in? So our we probably are half of what we used to ask for as far as volunteers, but we still have active volunteers, but we're also a college town. So we have a lot of younger people that are willing and able.
And what was Cincinnati going to say, both Jonathan and Linda?
So go ahead, Jay.
You muted yourself by mistake.
So we have definitely slimmed down the amount of volunteers that we're allowing into the building. So it's typically, it's two at usually. If it's going to be a busy day, if we need an extra hand, it'll be three volunteers plus maybe two staff members. We try to keep the doors and everything open in the pantry area and throughout the building when it's not too cold. It's going to be more of a challenge now in the winter. So we're working on that. But yeah, we definitely slimmed everything down. We do pre-packing for the clients now. We have a shopping list that we give them. But we've kind of transitioned to more deliveries. However, we still have a significant curbside pickup from clients that can drive or that live locally. So that's what we're currently looking at.
So even a lot of our older volunteers are still coming, and like families are sometimes coming together. So it makes, you know, trying to make sure they stay the 6 feet apart a little bit easier. We had a group of three come in and they were, you know, older than me even, and they did an incredible job and they did everything. They, you know, people who are inclined to do this will do this no matter what age. And it's been, I think it's been amazing. Yeah.
So Linda, you say something. So all of you are on the front lines. You're doing all the work. I mean, as well, you know, you're not just sitting in your offices and watching it. So do you feel inspired? Like that's what you said, like you feel inspired to do this work and passionate about the work. So you're not feeling the burnout? Like I would think that this group would be feeling like completely, you know, exhausted and overwhelmed because you've been on the go since March 13th. I mean, this has not let up one second. But
for us, it's we're not in the office every day. So we come in the minimum necessary to pull off the pantry. We're open 4 days a month and it's like every other week. And so on those off weeks, well, Jay's in more because he's picking up a lot of the food, but the people who don't have to be in are working at home. And so I think that's helped us by not having to be in the office all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been some challenges, you know, I've unfortunately was recently out sick. So Linda had to coordinate more. So it can be challenging, but I think we've handled it pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, people are handling it. People are doing their work. It's just hard. Yeah, Marcy.
So are people here? I mean,
well, Marcy was just going to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Hi.
No, go ahead.
I'm calling from, hold on one sec. Thank you so much, Bob. I'm in from Rhode Island. And I guess our situation is very similar to Linda. We are open every other week. For pre-bagged pickup, there is some choice put out. I have volunteers that come in and help with the pre-bagging the day before, and then we're open. So we do pre-bagging on Wednesday, which we're doing today, and then we're open technically Thursday and Friday, but we're supposed to have a snowstorm tomorrow, so it's pushed to Monday. And then I do all the any shopping that I need the early in that week. And then the following week, I work remotely unless I have an emergency phone call from somebody. And so it's every other week, like I'm on. And then the other weeks I'm like remote, doing other work, answering other calls, doing other stuff. And it seems to work really well. And then I have volunteers, no more than two at a time in the pantry at any one time. So
good.
Others?
Yeah, Christina.
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, we doubled our food hub clients getting either prepared meals or food bank deliveries. But we drastically decreased our number of volunteers on our floor and expanded the amount of days it took us to pack to ensure safe social distance measures or physical distance measures. And then we made sure that those groups that are packing together are in the same vector. So they're like the same family groups that come in. But it's basically moved what would have otherwise been like a 1 day operation to like 4 days of packing.
Yeah.
And then, so while we decreased our floor volunteers, we've expanded our volunteer driver pool, which used to be like 5 people. And we utilize about 65 drivers on the road on any given week to deliver out. And then we also built out a network of hubs with shuls and with other food hubs throughout the Lower Mainland to service some of these outlying areas. So we have a truck that brings to those specific hubs and then delivers out utilizing volunteers from like different shuls in different communities or different like other community programs. And then they pick up from those hubs and deliver out to some of those rural communities. But for us, like JFS Vancouver is like not necessarily where the need is per se. Like there's certainly a population of people in the city center, but we service a pretty wide geographic community. And for a lot of that community who's low income or facing food insecurity, they're further out. So we had to work on some strategies to sort
of get guys have really grown.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So summarize, are people, maybe you guys are all incredibly good, you know, just get your job done and good sports. Are people not feeling sort of an exhaustion that, you know, hey, we have 3, 4, 5, 6 months more of this need increasing? Is everyone just, you know, feeling okay about it at the higher volume, fewer volunteers? I think you're all great, but I just surprised. Yeah, go ahead.
I think, you know, we before, like a year ago, we were seeing in our pantry, it's pretty small, about 50 clients a month. And we expanded, this was even pre-COVID, with the addition of a van and a truck. We're now seeing about, we're feeding out not only in our office, but bringing out, serving about 750 families a month now. And I think we're just too exhausted to realize that we're so exhausted.
Yeah.
Like it didn't occur to me until I just got on this Zoom call that, yeah, maybe I'm tired. We're like all tired. We've been working nonstop. So, yeah, it's sort of like we're doing our jobs. I don't think many of us realize that, yes, we are on the front lines. We're out there. We're exposing ourselves, but being as careful as we can. And we're just really doing our jobs. So I tell my coworkers, if it was their job, I would expect them to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Erica wanted to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, we've had an odd situation here in St. Louis where we're getting about 200 to 250 new families a month. However, we've had so many people who are staying at home and not coming that it's balancing out. And because we've been doing this since the middle to end of March, I think we've gotten very much in a good rhythm. And I think that's the trick, is to kind of find that groove of who does what and who makes sure that what happens. So we're going to be in big trouble if all of our regular pantry guests come back along with all the new ones. But so far they have been grateful. We have been very grateful that we're getting a balance of so many new families, but for some reason, a lot are staying home as well. I think one of the interesting things that we're finding here is I think there's where we're missing the choice piece that we used to have, and we're trying to figure out how to reincorporate that. We are finding that there are a lot of things with our drive-through that we may continue once the pandemic is under control that we actually really like. So I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do that. I need to kind of think way in the distance, but some of the things that we're doing now are working really well.
Well, that's great. I thought that this might be a good topic because I think I was talking to Don and Joe, and when I send out, you know, my emails to my distribution list, you know, I may get one back, you know, saying that the person's not there. But when I sent it out to our food pantry professionals distribution list, I got around 20 back saying that the person was no longer there. So, you know, I was thinking, you know, it's probably a really hard field to be in right now. And there is a lot of turnover and potentially a lot of burnout. And that's why we thought it might be important to talk about.
You know, Lisa, I think the other side of the coin is, though, when you see the doctors and the nurses and they're so burnt out, at least, you know, we do such great stuff. And I think that's what fuels it. People are so happy. They leave here happy. I do food distributions every week with Farm Share Feeding South Florida. And the people are so grateful to come by that you're putting the food in your car when they come here to the food bank. Right now we're giving out Hanukkah presents. We're giving toys for kids. We did a survey about what seniors wanted, and we're giving every senior family a set of new pillows. And people cry and hug the pillows, and they don't come in. You know, I'm just saying hello to them at the door, but they're sending letters. So I think that's what fuels us differently than other first responders who are, you know, working and tired, because I know I'm working, you know, I'm really too old for this job. I'm working much harder than I ever did. But the feedback from the families is just so great that it keeps you going.
Right.
Yeah. I just want to share, because I don't usually come to this meeting. I do the social service arm of JFSLA and Fred's, of course, here managing SOVA and all the people, you know, coming in, the volunteers. But I do see on the social work side, you know, our role was to help people coming to SOVA connect with everything that's available. And for the social workers that I supervise, there is a feeling of real challenge right now because the issues are so much more intense. And then on top of it, working with more people who have COVID or, you know, so I came to hear about this because there's less of a, there are things out there, but at the same time, the level of need and the situation is so much more dire. So, you know, trying to support the team, whoever mentioned just letting people talk, acknowledging it in our staff meeting has been helpful.
Yeah.
But no easy answer to that. And whoever said making sure people take time off, you know, that take one of the staff people who speak Spanish and is doing the most with a lot of these clients is taking off next week.
Yeah. And Jen, you know, not to create another group, Lisa, but what Jen's talking about, we would see in our social work team, because we copied SOVA and basically have Kessler KC, which is our version of the combined pantry and social work. And I think our social workers are struggling too, and also distributing CARES funds with ridiculous rules and stuff. But that's a separate group, really. So Jen, maybe we'll start another group and get that group together also.
We do some of that. Maybe the social workers on your team should be coming to Lisa, the case management affinity group that we have, financial.
Right, assistance. We have a financial assistant.
Oh, you know what? I wonder, is Maggie, I'll have to check and make sure our team knows about that.
Okay. We've got a really good series coming up in January. I'll let you know.
Okay, cool. Anyway, what I feel like. Can I ask a question? Just, it's not exactly on the list, but, and then we can transition back. What things are people doing? You know, we talked about distancing, and obviously you can be wearing masks when people are around. Are your agencies doing other things to mitigate for the people who are working in office? You know, we've gotten filtration systems. We're actually doing weekly pool testing of all in-person staff and just wondered, are other people doing those? Anything else people are doing to mitigate COVID for people?
We take temperatures every day when every staff that comes in and volunteer. We take temperatures. So
we have approximately 10 people that are in the office, as opposed to about 70 during normal times. There's a sign-in sheet. When people who normally wouldn't be coming in, they are signing in so that we can at least do tracking if anybody comes down with COVID, which thank God hasn't happened. But there are people that have been in contact with people that have come down with it. Actually, I just remembered somebody did come down with it. So our HR sends out an email to anybody who was exposed to that person to let them know. So it's not just an email blast, but it's specified.
Someone was going to say something. Was that Marcy? Were you going to say something?
Yeah. Our office, the office staff got split into teams and they were rotating teams. So that like the pantry was in one team and I was in during the pantry week and then remote the next week. And then everybody was like on a team and then they swapped. So there was only so many people in the building. But because Rhode Island has had a lockdown the past 3 weeks, there's only a manager and an admin staff and a finance person in the building at any one time now. And everybody else is remote except when I need to come in. I'm special.
I have a question for the group if we're okay moving to a different subject.
Sure.
So I'm curious, all of our pantry staff are coming in every day. And a lot of the other JFS staff are working from home. And I've actually had a problem, well, not really a problem, but a challenge with keeping morale up. I think everybody is very grateful and thankful for having a job and not having to go look for another one. But it's really hard because the rules are different when you come into the office as opposed to when you work from home. Does anybody else have any other have similar challenges with staff feeling like, you know, maybe they're working harder or the rules are different than those who are working at home?
It's a really good question.
I think it does feel like it's not equal sometimes, and our people have not complained about it. But, you know, typically when you drive to the office, you're not counting your drive time as work time. But now people have to, and at the beginning, we were paying mileage just for the people who did have to come to the office, but we stopped doing that after a while. So now, you know, those working at home, it feels like your day is packed, but you can work your hours and close the computer and walk away. So I feel weird about like the drive time because it's like I've never asked anybody if they're including that in their time because I just honor whatever they do. But it does feel like it's not equal. And we also have a few people who have said, I'm not comfortable coming in. I have some health issues or I'm just afraid. And then other people have to come in and do their work instead. Mm. And that has been very difficult. But so far we've had enough people who are still willing to come in that it hasn't caused a huge problem, but it does sort of divide people a little bit.
Here in Los Angeles, early on, we were able to provide, if you want to call it that, hazard pay. Which was a premium of, you know, $2-3 an hour to people who were, it was necessary for that. They were not, you know, could not do their work from home. And, you know, particularly the people who are working in the food pantry and at our home delivered meal program. And I think they were very grateful to get the additional money that, unfortunately, it was not sustainable for, you know, as long as this is dragged out. And so very recently we had to eliminate that hazard pay. And I think for some people it was a sense that, you know, just when we might need it the most, it's going away. So there's some dissatisfaction in that. On the subject of what we do to, reduce opportunities for exposure. I mean, of course, everyone wears masks. Everyone has their temperatures as they enter. Everyone maintains social distancing, even within the work environment. We bring food to the cars of the people who are coming in. We do all the things we can to stay as far apart as we possibly can, but there's certainly greater risk for those that are on the front lines than for those who, like me, are in a position to work from home.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I've shared with our staff in Kansas City is that from hearing from our other coworkers who are working at home, the main thing that they're missing is the feeling of community, and that for us, it's kind of a benefit that we get to come to work and see each other and have these relationships. We've also done a lot of ridiculous things. Today we had a board member bring us lunch, box lunches from another nonprofit. So I just said, hey, wear your favorite festive shirt. So there are some goofy photos going around of those of us who were able to participate in that today. But just helping people remember that those who are working from home are missing out on a lot of socialization that we do have the luxury to have on a daily basis.
I think, like, in general, just being more siloed in terms of, like, not being able to see each other and work together interdepartmentally just means that, like, there's less of an awareness, like, across departments as to, like, the stressors. So I think certainly some of the feedback we've had is this, that, like, nobody really knows quite clearly what another department is doing sometimes comparative to when we were all together. Mm-hmm. So it certainly feels like there's just a lack of transparency by virtue of the fact that we're so separated now, right? Like, so we don't know what our case managers are going through or what contacts they might have had with a food pantry client and vice versa. So it's a lot, and it's just like a lot more to, like, get together and to collaborate on things. So I think that's our biggest issue, not necessarily feeling like we're doing more work than anyone, but just feeling like nobody knows the work that we're doing.
But is that because you guys aren't planning meetings together to talk about it, or it's just too difficult to have those kinds of meetings on a weekly?
I mean, we have staff meetings, but I think, you know, previously we would have, like, staff come down to the food bank on a regular basis,
so they would,
like,
be involved. Yeah.
Right? Like, before, you know, when we were dealing with a client, you know, our case management team would be right beside us in the office, right? So if we're doing an intake, we have a question to ask, or vice versa, you know, we're close together. Now those things are sort of happening remotely.
Yeah.
And so there's just, like, less transparency in general. We do come together, but even then, right, it's just a little bit trickier now to, like, see what's happening in any given day for, like, what any part of the agency is doing. And I know I can't remember who said it, but, like, I know our case managers are going through some, like, more complex clients now than before, and we don't see any of that either, you know what I mean? So across the agency, I think it's become a little bit more complex.
So what does anyone else want to talk about? Food pantry professionals. Everyone's good? No challenges?
Bonnie, were you going to chat about the Farmers to Families program? Has anybody seen, or is that,
I was going to ask a question.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just going to share a little bit about our agency. I'm Gail from Gulf Coast Jewish Family Services, and our headquarters is in Clearwater. So I run the food pantry here, which is a very small food pantry, but who gets food are clients that are clients of Gulf Coast. So our case managers come into our food pantry and they can pack food to take to their clients. And so that's been really helpful. One of the things that we have been doing is through Feeding Tampa Bay, they have a grant for frozen food, and they've been delivering frozen food to us for months now. And with that food, we've scaled it where every other Tuesday we take food and we deliver it to about 26 people. So, and then just in the past couple of weeks, we've actually recruited some of our volunteers to take the food to these people, because like when you talk about burnout, I think that that was a little bit of a burnout for some of the staff here. Within our Jewish Family Services program. So that's been working out really well, and hopefully that will continue through next year. I don't know how long it will continue, but it's been really good, and the clients are very happy with it. It's not kosher, but, and then some of the people call and say, I don't want this, that, or the other. And so we try to accommodate them as much as possible. One of the things I've been working mostly from home and coming in once a week to do paperwork. And right now I have, our annual Hanukkah bazaar is going on. So I invite my clients to come in, and we've opened it up to all clients of Gulf Coast where they have to have an appointment. I'm only letting two people in at a time into our conference room, which is a big conference room. All the donations that we have received over the past year and recently, we make into a little gifts store type of thing, and people come in and shop for free. So that's been a real up for people around our community. And so I have a few volunteers that love coming in to help out, not only in the bazaar, but this year, I know somebody had mentioned a food list. And so I made up a food list, so people, when they come in and they have to fill out paperwork, they fill out this food list. And then I only allow volunteers into the food pantry to fill the food list. And that way I'm limiting who's going into the food pantry. So that's working out really well. And the other thing that I've done, and I can do this from home, is send out gift cards to my clients. And so that's been amazing. I used to send out $20 gift cards, which really doesn't go that far, but we've gotten quite a few grants and some really nice donations. And so now I'm sending out $50 gift cards, and that wow. really makes a big difference. And so, that's what we're doing here. Our donations are really up, and some of the area synagogues have done these drive-by. One synagogue did a drive-by. If you're gonna, you can come and get a Hanukkah bag and just bring to Gulf Coast, bring in some cleaning supplies. So we had one synagogue that did a food drive and another that did cleaning supplies, hand sanitizers, toilet paper, paper towels. And so now I have all that stuff here, and I can give out to our clients that are coming in for the bazaar. So that's what we're doing here at Gulf Coast.
I like that drive through with synagogues and
it's
asking
been working out.
What you it's, want. Yeah, yeah. That's a good idea.
We do a lot of driveway drive-throughs with donors in neighborhoods. I talked a little about this with you last time, Lisa, where we take the food bank truck to your home, and we do a flyer that says the food bank truck will be in your neighborhood at Lisa's house on Tuesday from 2 to 4. And then the homeowner, you know, sends that out on the neighborhood chat, the neighbors next door, friends and family. And it's been fantastic.
It's a great idea too.
Each one brings a new one. And we've advertised it as, you know, this is a great thing to do for your birthday and a way to see, get to see your neighbors. The other thing we did this weekend is I do a lot of scavenger hunts during the year, and it's a huge fundraiser, friendraiser for me with schools and PJ Library and sisterhoods, where people gather at the grocery store. And then I give them a choice of like $18, $36, $72 lists and with funny clues, and they go shopping at Purim time. I do it in costume, and it's a great family fun activity. Could be a whole other workshop. And so I couldn't do that this year. So I did a virtual scavenger hunt this Sunday, and it was really great. Lisa, I just sent it to you. So we sent out the clues to the schools, and they sent them out in advance. And people were then welcome to shop at their leisure or Instacart. And then we set up a drive-through, just like when people come to get food, but this time to give food here at the food bank on Sunday. And we had more volunteers than we knew what to do with, because people on a Sunday with their kids really like to have an opportunity. And we had different stations, where one where you dropped off your food, and another where you got community service hours and a certificate of completion, and another where you got some Hanukkah gelt just for coming. And it was great, really great.
You always have really creative ideas down there in Miami. You know, that's
I think people just, they want the opportunity to help you. So you've got to create something safe. And I find here, they also want something family friendly that they can do with their children. Mm-hmm. And the people with the most money are the people that really need to teach their children how to be philanthropists and good human beings. And we can help them do that. And I sold sponsorships to the clues, and I raised about $6,000.
Okay, so you're going to present that at our annual conference. You know, stop talking now, present that. People want to raise money. It seems like something fantastic and relatively easy, and it's a win-win-win. I don't know how easy, but it seems like something people could do.
It was pretty easy. Easiest scavenger hunt I ever did, because I didn't have to do anything.
Go out in a costume. So Bonnie, I know Joe wanted to ask you something. Or Joe thought that this would be something important for people to hear about, and we had asked you to talk about it, right?
Yeah, Bonnie, have you, so the Farmers to Families program through the USDA used to just be produce, milk, or dairy and meat in three individual boxes, and now they've combined that all into one box. Are you guys having any challenges with that now?
So we had to, as an agency, we only give out kosher food. So we had to, we were getting boxes from Feeding South Florida, just tremendous amount of boxes, just overwhelming amount of boxes. I had to have like 10 churches on speed call, because they would dump me 60 pallets of vegetables and fruits at the end. I probably, you know, we're near Homestead, there's so much product here. So then they stopped that, and they started packing the boxes, as you said, with chicken. So we left Feeding South Florida, and Farm Share, I don't know if you have Farm Share there, because it's out of Homestead, has a USD program just for vegetables. So we actually send trucks down to Homestead. We beg, borrow, and steal trucks. They actually have a truck that's painted. It was from a place called Good Karma. It's painted like with Paris and berets, and you can't miss this thing on the road. It's pink and purple. And so we send that truck down to Homestead, and we've been picking up produce from Farm Share.
Sorry, hold on one second.
And we've been distributing to six area synagogues instead of through
food
bank, because we just can't handle that volume of people. We're giving produce and dairy to 1,000 extra families every week through the synagogues. So we started out with 8 synagogues. We went to 4. Now that school started, we're doing 6. And the other synagogues pick up from them. So that's how we've been able to expand without exploding our food bank, because we're a choice food bank. you know, we don't have crowds of people in here. And so that's what we've been doing.
How about others or people participating in the USDA program, and how have they dealt with the change?
Is anyone else on that program? I guess they're not.
On USDA?
Oh, yeah.
We receive USDA food, but not Farms to Family. Is that a separate program? I assume it's separate. We're not familiar. I'm not familiar with it.
It's boxes of, so we get it through Harvesters, which is our community food bank. So I would think it would probably come from your community food bank as well. And it's, in the beginning, it was just fresh fruits and vegetables. So it was fairly shelf stable. We could get it early in the week, distribute it all in a couple of days, and then move on. But now that it has, now including dairy and protein items, it's no longer, space is an issue for us, even with a walk-in refrigerator and freezer.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, a good problem that we've had, I guess you could call it that, is that so far the support from, you know, community members and agencies, synagogues, and like our local food bank has been more than amazing. It's been great, but everybody wants to give us stuff. We bought new shelving to use our lobby, which is currently, we're not using our office, is housing extra food because people are just giving so much of it. So it's really more of a problem of how do we keep this stuff and how do we get it out and distribute it before, you know, it's with non-perishable items, it's not such a big deal, but definitely with like our fresh fruits, vegetables, and meat, we don't want it to go to waste.
Right.
So it's always a conflict of like, what can we take versus try to find another, you know, community partner that's going to distribute, you know, before we do. Or so that's the biggest challenge.
Logistics are so difficult.
Yeah.
Christina was going to respond to that, I think. Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, I mean, our food bank is typically it's 100% vegetarian, so we don't have that problem. occasionally a kosher butcher will like do a donation, and then we'll sort of parse that out. But we don't do meat, so we circumvent that problem that way.
Wow. Are there any other, I've never heard of that. Are there any other pantries that are completely vegetarian? That's unusual, but.
And no tuna, or you don't give any tuna or any canned fish either?
Pescatarian. I digress. All right.
Body knows.
Out of curiosity, like how many people are running kosher food pantries? I guess if you just raise your hand. Okay.
So three out of this group.
Yeah, and that makes it difficult for us to take the USDA food because most of it isn't kosher. Even from our food bank, we have a lot of, you know, like I got a call for the first time in about 2 years that I was able to go over that the tuna that they received was kosher. So I picked up 21 cases of tuna, but otherwise we can get very little from them. Yes.
A lot of tuna. And it lasts, I know. So does anyone else want to tell us anything about or have any questions or concerns or want to talk to us in the remaining 10 minutes? I don't know, JFS, Rochester.
One of the things we're doing right now is we're looking at ways to really reach out and say thank you to all of our volunteers. We have definitely scaled back. We have 2 volunteers at the food cupboard and a lot of volunteers at home who'd love to be helping out, but we're keeping it safe. And so they're feeling left out. And so if anyone had any ideas for ways that we could recognize them and let them know that we still think of them and we appreciate them.
So here in St. Louis, we had similar situation and we've done 2 things since April. 2 things is obviously not a lot since April, but shortly after the pandemic began and we were asking people to stay at home, we purchased cookies that were individually bagged. And then we had stickers printed with our JFS logo and with a really nice note from the pantry staff and our CEO thanking them for taking care of themselves and in turn taking care of the pantry and our guests. And then we had volunteers who were comfortable doing porch drop-offs, literally drive around and drop them off on everybody's doorstep. And I did some myself and it was so nice. And essentially I'd put it on the doorstep and then I'd ring the doorbell and I'd step back 10 or 15 feet to wait to make sure that they answered. So that was really nice. And I know it seems odd because it was just a single cookie, but they seemed to be very appreciative of it. And then also we just did maybe the week or two before Thanksgiving, we actually hosted two or three Zoom calls. Inviting our volunteers to come. And we just gave them a chance to see each other and to ask questions about how things are going at the pantry. And a couple of them offered to help with data entry and things from home, which we've taken them up on. But it was just, I think, you know, it was just an hour for them to see staff faces and each other's faces. And I think they were very appreciative of it.
Nice. She was right.
I love that. Thank you for taking care of yourself.
Yeah,
that's really nice.
Yeah. So anyone else have any comments, thoughts? Bring us home. Vanessa, you just came on. You want to tell us something? You don't have to.
Nothing that hasn't already been said. You know, we have the same issues of balancing being in the office because we have really had maybe half days at home, not so many days or weeks remote. So, you know, nothing that no one has already said.
Okay. So, Don, Joe, do you want to end it, say anything, or I can end. I don't know if you guys want to.
Yeah, I'll just say, Joe, if you have something, you guys, I obviously Joe runs our pantry and I don't. I think you're all amazing that you've all reacted and are keeping spirits up given how hard you're working. So I think you're an amazing group. All your agencies are really lucky to have you. You know, I think should look at this group as a way to share ideas and, you know, their differences among us. You know, some have more kosher, not kosher, some other things of what we can use, but certainly lots of similarities despite the size differences and things like that. So, and Lisa, remind me, there's also like a Facebook group and things like that that people can share with too, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I can send that out and I will, because there's also an end of the year survey that you guys can fill out. It's really simple. If we want to continue this, and if we do, you know, is it been working for you, this affinity group and discussion, and what works and what doesn't, and et cetera, so that we make sure that this is meeting your needs, right, as we move into 2021, because I just think it's not ending, right? This isn't ending.
It is not ending for months, at least.
Yeah.
And so, I
go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to say, I would encourage you and others just to reach out to each other to support each other. I know Erica and I had a follow-up phone call after our last affinity group meeting just to brainstorm some ideas and see how we could help support each other and what's working and what's not working for our agencies. We're somewhat similar. So if you've kind of jive with somebody else on the screen, reach out to Lisa and she can help connect you with.
Absolutely. And if you have any great resources, like Bonnie said, she sent something, but I didn't get it yet. Send it, because I can put it into the food pantry resource file right on our website. And you just get into the resource library the way that you, for everything, the affinity groups, the webinars. And I hope everyone knows how to do that. And if not, email me and I'll send you the password and the username, because we all have the same one, as it were. So, you know, and you just have to keep it on hand so that you can get in there, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. And we get it all from you, because you all are doing really good work and amazing things and keeping your communities afloat. So, you know, I tip my hat to you and, you know, wish you happy holidays and happy new year. And everyone continue to stay safe and stay well, take care of yourself. And I guess we'll see you in the new year, right?
All right. And thanks, Lisa, for organizing. Thanks,
everyone, for being here. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Bye.